immediately the purification takes place. It is in the company of such saintly persons that we can understand what is the essence of God within the temple. What is the essence of God within the holy river? Then there's actually vibrant life and dynamic experience and realization that takes place when we engage in these various spiritual activities. So therefore, here Lord Shiva is explaining that there is no greater benediction, there is no greater wealth than the association of saintly devotees. In fact, Lord Shiva is coming here in this place where that we are reading in order to give benediction to Markandeya Muni. Goddess Uma is saying to Lord Shiva that this man is such a great devotee, you should give him a good benediction. And Lord Shiva says, naive chatya vishasha papi pramarshir mokshamapyata bhaktim param bhagavati labdhavan purushevyaye. That surely this saintly Brahman does not desire any benediction, not even liberation itself, for he has attained pure devotional service unto the inexhaustible personality of Godhead. Athapi samvadishyamo bhavan yetena sadhuna ayam hi paramo labho nirnam sadhu samagama. Still, my dear Bhavani, let us talk with this saintly personality. After all, association with saintly devotees is man's highest achievement. Such glorification and praise that this great expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is offering to his own devotee, Markandeya Muni. So I'd like to speak something about Markandeya Muni today. The reason I was inspired to think in this way is because last night we were driving back from Andheri and we had a very remarkable darshan of Maya, the material energy. Last night Raghunath Das, he insisted that you come, please, everything is nice. So we came. And somehow or other, over 200 guests appeared in this beautiful garden. Because you see, wherever devotees are gathering together to chant the holy names, that is the spiritual world. Tatra tishtami narada yatra gayanti mad bhakta. Krishna says, wherever my devotees are coming together to chant my names and glories, I am in that place. And wherever Krishna is, that is Vrindavan. It is a fact. We are traveling great distances to go to Vrindavan, which is very nice. We are traveling great distances to go to holy places. That is also very nice. But factually, right here at Radha Gopinath Temple, when the devotees come together to chant the holy names, all the holy places in the entire creation enter into this room. Because Krishna is Tirtharaj. He is the king of all holy places. And wherever he appears, all the dhams appear with him. And it is explained in this age of Kali Yuga, he appears within his name. Wherever the devotees are joyfully, enthusiastically, and sincerely chanting Krishna's name, all the holy places are there. So when one of our devotees say, oh, I have gone to Pandrapur this weekend, or I have gone to Ayodhya this weekend, or I have gone to Vrindavan this weekend, we say, well, I have gone to all those places this weekend. Because I have come to the lotus feet of Radha Gopinath and entered into the divine kirtan of the holy name. We get the credit of all these things. This is the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he has empowered the holy name with such power and glory. Anyways, we were chanting last night, and really such an atmosphere. Although there was violence and fires and bloodshed all around, it was a beautiful garden with nice trees and creepers and lights, and devotees were jubilantly chanting and dancing and having nice prasad and hearing nice philosophy. But then as soon as the kirtan ended and the prasadam ended and we left, it was like leaving Goloka Vrindavan to enter into the Patala Lokas. Huh? Really, as we were driving, it was dark. Of course, the Bombay streets, even if everything is going very well, they're still dark and dingy, but very dark and dingy and deserted. And people walking around with machine guns and houses on fire and cars on fire and the tension of the air. And it was really a darshan of maya, a darshan of material energy. And of course, it is a learning experience. For what? This is what this potentially, imminently, this world faces crises like this at any moment. Ultimately, death comes upon everyone, whether it's through one form or another. But as we were seeing how the agents of maya, the agents of illusion, were creating such a display of just horrible and frightening environment all around, I began to think of this is actually Krishna is showing us a very, very vital aspect of this material creation, the aspect of suffering and destruction. And I was thinking in terms that Markandeya Muni also wanted to see this aspect of God and what he saw. This Markandeya Muni was a very, very great devotee. He was born, and from his early childhood, he was given the sacred thread, and he was very much inclined towards spiritual life. He began to perform tremendous tapasya. He would fall into states of deep, deep, deep meditation, always worshiping the Lord within his heart. It said he was constantly worshiping the Lord in five features, as the sacred fire, as the sun, as the Brahmins, as the super soul in his own heart, in the Vedas. This way he was always immersed, cared nothing for material life. He made a vow of lifelong celibacy. In this way, he was so much engrossed in bhakti, in devotion to the Supreme Lord, that Indra became very frightened of him. Because materialistic people have a different way of looking at life than devotees. A devotee is detached. A devotee is content with whatever he has, and content with whatever he does not have. And a devotee is simply always trying to keep his mind fixed in loving devotional service to Krishna, knowing that this is the only real wealth. But materialistic people, they think that everyone thinks like me, that sense gratification is the most important thing in life, that to have nice, beautiful ladies, to have fame, prestige, and wealth. Everyone wants these things. So if this Markandeya Rishi is doing such tapasya, he must be doing it in order to get mystic powers to conquer me. After all, we read about Hiranyakashipu. He performed similar tapasya, but for what reason? So that he could conquer the world. And Ravana also performed tremendous tapasya. There are so many stories in the scriptures of people who perform the mystic yoga process and worship God and do such austerities, but their motive is to get the power to conquer others and thus become fabulously wealthy and influential. So Indra had to deal with so many such beings. So he was thinking, perhaps Markandeya Rishi is the same? So he called upon Cupid, Kamadev, and all of his associates, that you do whatever is required, but somehow or other you must seduce this man to enjoy sense gratification again. Because as soon as he breaks his tapasya to enjoy sense gratification, he will lose all the credits of his mysticism. And then he will be harmless. You see, this is material psychology. That to the degree we are attached to enjoying our senses, whether they be the gross or subtle — subtle means profit, adoration, and distinction, and gross sense gratification means to enjoy this body — to the degree we are attached, we are under the control of Maya, and we are under the control of the exploitative representatives of Maya in this world. Just like at New Vrindavan, when certain very, very demoniac, materialistic people being threatened by New Vrindavan — why were they threatened? Because they were thinking, to the degree this community becomes successful, people will stop eating meat, they will stop taking intoxications, they will stop having illicit sex, they will stop gambling, and this is a great threat to our economy. One of the greatest industries in the world, the number one selling industry on the planet right now, is drugs and alcohol, intoxication. There's more money being spent in that than anything else. And after that come such things as gambling. What to speak of the meat industry? And everything is being advertised on the basis of sex. Power and money were being threatened. So how to destroy the community? We can get anybody to turn against Krishna if we just take away their sense gratification. We can get anybody to say anything about anyone if we just threaten their sense gratification. And that's how they work. We threaten that we'll take away all this sense gratification from you unless you say what we want you to say. Oh, we will say. But as they were threatening and everything, some people were just becoming the humble puppets in the hands of these people. Because to the degree you're attached to sense gratification, to that degree you are controlled by demoniac forces. But Srila Bhaktipada, they were so bewildered, because no matter what they did, no matter how much they tried to scare him, no matter how much they tried to put fear in his heart, no matter how much they took away everything from him, he was just more and more and more enthusiastic to serve Krishna, to preach Krishna, to speak the truth. They're baffled. They don't know what to do. So the temptation of sense gratification in our life is the greatest evil and the greatest danger. A devotee should not be afraid of death. A devotee should not be afraid of losing everything of this world, because those things are inevitable. Why be afraid? But a devotee should be very much afraid of falling into the temptation of sinful life. And that only can take place if we forget Krishna. Therefore, a devotee is terribly afraid of forgetting Krishna and falling into temptation of Maya. So Cupid came to the ashram of Markandeya Muni on the bank of the Pushpa Bhadra River and created a beautiful spring atmosphere with the scent of sandalwood coming from the Malayan hills. although this is way up in the northern part of the Himalayas. There were beautiful trees and fragrant flowers growing. And beautiful dancing girls singing and dancing all around him, playing with balls. And Cupid took his five-headed arrow and shot it into the heart of Markandeya Muni. But he was simply sitting there in his devotional meditation on the Lord of his heart, Lord Narayan. And as they were doing everything within their power to distract his attention, ultimately, the fire of his devotion was so great that they started to feel themselves being burnt. So then they just all offered their obeisances to him. They were defeated, and they went back to Indra and explained to him the situation. At that time, because Markandeya Muni was able to resist the temptations of Maya and keep his mind so much fixed in Krishna in that testing period, Lord Narayan appeared before him. And this is very instructive. You see, Krishna, we may be Krishna conscious, but Krishna becomes most pleased to appear before us when in that Krishna consciousness we remain faithful and chaste in the face of great opposition and crisis in our life. When the greatest temptation to give up is there, if we remain strong, that's when Krishna really takes our devotional service seriously. Therefore, when difficulties come into a life of a devotee, if he's insincere, he gives up. Why? Why is Krishna doing this to me? I've chanted my rounds every day for the last 2 years, and I'm following the four regulative principles, and I give donations to the temple, and I'm a nice devotee, and I'm humble, and I'm sincere, and I'm trying my best. So why is Krishna putting me in a crisis? Why is he causing me pain and suffering? Why is he putting me in temptation? This is not fair. This means that I should worship someone else, not Krishna. I don't have faith. But a devotee who is sincere understands, crisis is coming into my life. This means Krishna is giving me the gift of the opportunity to show him that I actually am sincere, that I actually am faithful to him and chaste under any circumstance. Just like a chaste wife. If a chaste wife has no other alternative, what is the greatness of her chastity? But if a chaste wife is put into terrible temptations and she remains faithful to her husband, she utterly wins the heart of her husband. In the same way, Krishna puts his devotee in situations where his faith and his devotion and his perseverance is tested. So after Markandeya Muni was tested to such extreme extent because he remained pure in his devotion to the Lord was so pleased that he immediately appeared and gave personal darshan to Markandeya Rishi. He appeared in his divine form of Nara Narayan Rishis. One had a beautiful white form and one had an effulgent blackish form. Beautiful darshan that Markandeya Rishi saw of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And immediately he offered them, he stood up, he offered his prostrated obeisances, he gave them garlands, he gave them sitting place, washed their feet, offered them nice palatable foodstuffs. And then he began to pray. How fortunate he was that the Supreme Lord, who is the controller of all the modes of material nature, who is so difficult to achieve, has so kindly appeared before him. And he asked the Lord, "How can I serve you?" Lord Nara Narayan Rishi said to Markandeya Muni, I want to give you a benediction. Markandeya Muni said, huh, if you want to give me benediction, this is what I would like. That although you are so beautiful and you are all attractive, this material illusory energy is so powerful that it keeps everyone struggling so hard. And in complete forgetfulness of you. Struggling birth after birth after birth after birth, going through the repetition of old age, disease, and death, again and again and again, even though you're right within the heart of everyone, willing to reveal yourself, they're not willing to turn to you because they're so much infatuated by this illusory energy. He said, I want to see this illusory energy of yours, which is so wonderful and which is so complete in keeping everyone infatuated in forgetfulness of you. So Nara Narayan Rishis, they smiled and replied, so be it. And then they went back to the Badrik Ashram. Huh, Markandeya Muni? He went back into his worship of the Lord. He was sitting on the bank of the river. He was doing his puja. And one day, as he was sitting, all of a sudden, a wind came. Powerful, violent wind. With a terrifying roar. And as the wind was blowing and blowing and blowing, torrents of rain started falling from the sky. And soon he saw the four oceans on all four sides of him starting to swell up and come closer and closer and closer. And with the high rains and the tornadoes and hurricanes and winds that were blowing, all of a sudden these oceans started growing bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until they all merged into one massive ocean of dissolution, which completely covered the entire earth. And as torrents and torrents of rain was just pouring from the sky all over the place, the ocean was growing and growing until it covered the entire sky. It submerged all the heavenly planets. And it completely filled the entire universe. And the winds were still blowing, and there were massive waves just beating upon Markandeya Rishi. Just throwing him here and throwing him there and throwing him here and throwing him there. And there was these hurricanes coming and they were producing whirlpools, massive whirlpools that were sucking him in and spitting him out and sucking him in and spitting him out. Then there were these gigantic fish, monsters, Timangila fish, Makara fish, gigantic sharks and monstrous whales. And Timangila fish, which are 8 miles long, which could swallow whales, they were all, there was just thousands and millions of them all over, and they were fighting with one another and killing each other and roaring and screaming, and they were all coming and attacking Markandeya Rishi and brutally causing him terrible, inconceivable suffering. And meanwhile, there was nothing to eat, there was nothing to drink. He was suffering terrible, terrible, intensive pains of hunger and thirst. As he was being pushed in the water, out of the water, he didn't know what was up, what was down. He was delirious. He was becoming blind, deaf, and dumb. Meanwhile, they were freezing cold. And at times, he would become deathly, deathly sick. His health would just completely fall to pieces. And he remained in this situation for millions upon millions of years. And there was no refuge. There was nothing but this terrible, terrible ocean all around him, just smashing him and smashing him and smashing him. And ear-shattering, roaring, terrible sounds constantly taking place. And there was nowhere for him to take refuge anywhere. So after an entire night of Brahma, 4,320,000,000 years he was in this situation. You all know when you're in a suffering situation, you're just hoping, when will it end? When will it end? It's like sometimes when you're taking Indian railways and it's very crowded, you're just praying to God, when will I reach my destination? This is terrible. It's crowded, it's hot, people are just not at all polite to me, and everything is going on. When will I reach my destination? When you're sick, you're thinking, when will I get better? You can imagine the difficult situation of Markandeya Muni, and it lasted millions upon millions of years. As he was in this condition, all of a sudden, he saw a small island, the first land he had seen. And on that land was a banyan tree. And from that banyan tree there were many branches. And on each branch there were beautiful leaves. And on one leaf, on one of the branches, he saw the most miraculous sight. A beautiful little infant child. This infant child had a blackish complexion. He was actually blue, like a precious jewel. And he had neck which was curved with the lines like a conch shell. And the most beautiful, merciful, lotus-like eyes. And beautiful nose and ears which resembled the pomegranate flowers. Every limb of this child's body simply captivated the mind and the heart and all of the senses of Markandeya Rishi. And just upon seeing this beautiful child, all of his sufferings and miseries disappeared. And then this child very playfully took his hands and took one of his feet and lifted it in order to put his toes within his mouth. And as Markandeya Rishi saw the sweet, innocent, and beautiful sight of this little baby sucking his own toes, his heart was filled with love. The great acharyas, they explain, why was Krishna, in his beautiful little form of Bal Gopal, why was he sucking his toes? For one reason we can understand, Krishna was revealing how he is completely above this material existence. The whole ocean of dissolution was all around him, with all of these monstrous fishes attacking everything and all of these waves. In fact, every living creature in the entire universe was killed except Markandeya Muni. Everything was destroyed except him. And in the midst of this, where he was suffering so terribly, Krishna, he's just sitting like a little baby, sucking his feet. For him, this is all, he is always transcendental to his own creation. But another explanation is that great devotees of the Lord, they perform lifetimes of tapasya, they give up all attachments of this world, they perform such incredible devotion simply to taste the sweetness of the lotus feet of Krishna. So Krishna was curious, what is it about my lotus feet that are so sweet that people are willing to give up everything just to taste it? So of course, for Shyam Sundar Krishna or Dwarkadish Krishna to be sucking on feet is not according to their lila. Huh? But babies are expected to suck on their feet. So therefore he assumed the form of a little baby just so he can, in a very appropriate and conventional way, see what it was about his feet that was so attractive to all the great devotees. So as he was sucking on his toes, Markandeya Rishi, he saw that in this terrible dilemma of suffering in this ocean of material existence, here is my only refuge. So he began to approach baby Krishna. And as he approached him, Krishna inhaled. And as he inhaled, Markandeya Rishi became like a mosquito and was just sucked right into Krishna's mouth. He remained as he was, but you know, sometimes you inhale and you accidentally inhale a mosquito. Sometimes we do like that. And then we realize we took a vow of vegetarianism, so we have to somehow or other get it out. Huh? That's why we, even in our most pious state, if we don't chant the holy names, still sins will come upon us. Huh? We cannot avoid killing innocent creatures. We cannot even be pure vegetarians in the age of Kali Yuga. Because just by breathing, you don't know what's coming in. Therefore, we have to do our best and chant Hare Krishna, and Krishna will forgive us for our transgressions, whether they be intentional or unintentional. If they are intentional, then we must be punished by Krishna, by his mercy. If they are unintentional and we are chanting the holy names, Krishna will forget. There will be no reaction. But for Krishna, this was intentional. He ate his devotee. And as Markandeya Muni just all of a sudden flew into the mouth of Krishna, well, and this little baby, he was all of a sudden within him. He looked around and he saw the entire universe as it was before the ocean of dissolution came upon it. He saw all the heavenly planets. He saw all the demigods. He saw the earth, all the rivers and the oceans and the mountains and the forests. He even saw his own ashram in the Himalayas and the river and his own hermitage. He saw everything within the universe all around him. And he was struck with wonder. Ah, now that I am in the mouth of this little baby, now I am rescued from this terrible, terrible ocean of dissolution. And he was so happy. But baby Krishna exhaled. And as soon as he exhaled, he was just thrown back into the ocean, where all the waves and all the monsters and all the winds and all the freezing and all the starvation and thirst were all around him, and the whirlpools and hurricanes. But as he was outside, again he saw the banyan tree with the baby sitting on the banyan tree. And he looked, and baby Krishna glanced upon him with such a loving feeling. He felt so much love upon being touched by the glance of Sri Krishna that his heart just erupted with emotions of ecstasy. And he just started running toward this child to embrace him. And just as he was approaching the child disappeared. And when the child disappeared, Markandeya Rishi found himself again in his ashram, sitting on the bank of the river in the Himalayas. Now, after millions upon millions of years, he was very physically exhausted, but spiritually, he was in such a state of great gratefulness and devotion. And he was thinking, ah, the Lord has given me a little glimpse of what is Maya, what is the illusory energy, how utterly complete Maya is in every respect, and how even me, the greatest yogi who defeated Indra, how I was totally helpless being tossed about by the power of Maya with no refuge. But because I tolerated it all for Krishna's sake, ultimately it was the beautiful sight of this baby Krishna who delivered me from the ocean of Maya. And without his grace, without his love, no one, whoever they may be, has any hope of coming out of this great illusion of material energy. So with such pure love and devotion, he was meditating on Sri Krishna from his heart as he was sitting in his ashram. At that time, Lord Shiva and Parvati were coming by in the sky. And Parvati said, oh, Shiva, just see Markandeya Rishi. Do you know what he just went through? He just had darshan of the illusory energy of the Lord. What sufferings he had to undergo. And see how still, under all those conditions, he's remaining faithful, worshiping the personality of Godhead. He's so much engrossed in his meditation, he doesn't even know that the world exists around him. So Parvati and Lord Shiva, Parvati asked, Shankarji, please let us give him any benediction he wants. And Lord Shiva, he is saying that he's so much fixed in the supreme pleasure of devotional service that he does not desire any benediction. He doesn't desire even liberation. Because one who has attained pure devotional service unto Krishna, he is Atmaram, he is completely, fully self-satisfied. But still, Bhavani, just to be in his association and talk with him, we should go down to meet with him. Because after all, association with saintly devotees is the highest achievement in this entire creation. So when Parvati and Lord Shiva stood before Markandeya Rishi, he was so much engrossed in his internal feelings of meditation on Krishna that he didn't even notice that they were there. So Lord Shiva, by his mystic power, he entered into the air. And through the air, he entered into the heart of Markandeya Rishi. And there he appeared and gave darshan from the heart. And then Markandeya Rishi, upon seeing the beautiful form of Shankar, he opened his eyes, and there he saw the two divine personalities standing before him, and he bowed down and offered them, he offered them garlands and sitting place, washed their lotus feet, gave them nice fruits from the trees of his ashram, began to offer beautiful prayers. Began to offer beautiful prayers. And he said, how may I serve you? And then Lord Shiva began to praise his devotee. And when Markandeya Muni started hearing the praises of Lord Shiva, he was saying, this is the greatness, that you are an expansion of Krishna. You are Godhead himself. And yet, you are bowing down and praising your devotees. And Markandeya Muni said that, of course, he was just remembering the experiences of the last benediction he he said, I really do not want any benedictions. He said, just by seeing you who are such an exalted devotee of Lord Hari, such a personality, all my desires are fulfilled. But if you insist to grant me some benediction, this is the only benediction I want, that I may eternally have complete faith in Lord Sri Krishna, that I may eternally remember him with love and devotion, and that I may eternally be in his service, and that I may eternally be engaged in the loving service of Krishna's devotee. Eternally be in the service of such a great devotee as yourself. Markandeya Rishi, through his words, has illustrated to us that this is the supreme benediction. There is nothing more priceless than that. The opportunity to serve Krishna and his devotees. Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janamani janamanishwari bhavatad bhakti rahoita kitvai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has also prayed, my Lord, I do not want any amount of wealth, nor do I want any amount of sense enjoyment, which culminates in beautiful ladies, nor do I want any followers or any prestige or fame. I do not even want liberation from suffering. I only want one benediction, and that is birth after birth, causeless devotional service to you. And we find all the great personalities, when they taste the sweetness of love of God, this is all they ask for. Dhruva Maharaj was given the same opportunity. Kuvera said, I am the treasure of all the demigods. I will give you any benediction you like. And Dhruva Maharaj said, all I want is that I never forget Krishna and I always engage in the service of his devotees. What else are we aspiring for in this world? It costs nothing to worship Krishna. Anyone can do at any time by simply with a sincere heart chanting his name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. And to serve the devotees, the order of the spiritual master is always there. The Vaishnavas are always here. To be at their service costs nothing. The devotees are always anxious to associate with us and to engage us in their service. These things are free for everyone. And yet, we take it so much for granted. The greatest personalities like Sri Chaitanya, Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, Markandeya Muni, the greatest personalities that have ever lived, they consider nothing of any value whatsoever in this entire creation that compares to remembering Krishna and serving his devotees. And yet, look at our condition. We are struggling and striving so hard for all these other things that we don't even have time to accept the supreme wealth, the supreme benediction, which is always available. This is our lamentable condition. But Markandeya Muni, when he asked Lord Shiva, just let me always remember Krishna with love and serve his devotees and serve you, Lord Shiva was very satisfied. and he bestowed this benediction upon him. He bestowed him the benediction that you will remember, you will know past, present, and future. You will never die. You will always be with Krishna. And then Lord Shiva and Parvati left, and as they were leaving, they were simply discussing the glory of the Vaishnavas, the glory of Krishna's devotees. So how wonderful that by the grace of Guru, by the grace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Radha Gopinathji, that benediction is always available to all of us. Some of you today, you took great risks to come here. How wonderful. The foolish people in this world, they take such risks just to make a little more money, just to protect their body, to protect their family. They take such risks just for a little fame and prestige. But you have taken risk for the ultimate benediction, to serve the devotees and to remember Krishna. So therefore, this is your supreme fortune. It is the supreme fortune. Yesterday, and all around us, it is not that what we are seeing through all of these terrible conditions is something that is only happening at a particular time in a particular period. But actually, in this material world, death, destruction, pain, suffering, hypocrisy is underlying everything. Is it not? Even in the most pleasant day, all these things, all of these terrible conditions of life are present, even within the pleasant day. But it is mixed. We cannot perceive its presence. But what we see now is it is simply being extracted. Material existence, in its horrible feature of death and destruction, which is underlying everything in this world, is simply to a slightly higher degree being extracted to reveal itself to us as it is. Why? To make us more serious. To understand the truth and the reality of material life, of this illusory energy. That the only sane proposal in this material world, no matter how things are going, the only sane proposal is to go back home, back to Godhead, to become Krishna conscious, to realize the eternal, indestructible nature of the soul and God. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. In only that state of consciousness, which is brought about by the chanting of God's name, by the serving of the devotees, only that state of consciousness can bring a real sense of relief from this world, because only that state of consciousness is able to witness Krishna. And just as Markandeya Muni, he was in such a condition that makes the streets of Bombay look very pleasing. And he was suffering terribly until he had the darshan of little Krishna. Then everything became pleasant and auspicious. So similarly, whatever the situations in this world are, our only shelter, our only real pleasure, our only security is in Krishna, who has so lovingly appeared to us as Sri Radha Gopinathji, who has so lovingly appeared in the remembrance of his divine form and pastimes, and who is most wonderfully and mercifully appearing to us in his name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Is there any questions? So now we will chant Hare Krishna. We will invoke the divine presence of Vaikuntha even while living amidst this most hellish environment of Bombay. Huh? The fact is, even Bombay becomes Vaikuntha when the holy name is chanted. But as soon as the chanting stops, you're back in Bombay. Huh? Just like Markandeya Muni. When we chant the holy names, Krishna just inhales us and we're in the spiritual world. But as soon as we stop, we're back in Bombay again. Dissolution, the place of dissolution. So everyone please rise.